Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about the potent elements of the exercise stimulus and why, paradoxically, the more effective it is, the less time it takes. Please enjoy.
Welcome to the Perfect Workout Podcast, where fitness meets simplicity. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of the Perfect Workout. I'm joined by Jim Keen, our director of training. We hope you enjoy today's episode. All right. Welcome back. Episode 3.
We're done.
Here we are. Yep. We got a long way to go. This is going to be a really fun one. So last week we talked a lot about that paradox that exercise, as long as it's potent, that espresso versus the regular coffee, it can be not only more efficient, which overcomes that skepticism around time, etc. But we also kind of alluded to the idea that if you strength train with the right method in a short amount of time, rather than leaving some things on the table, meaning you would get better results if you were to strength train longer or exercise longer, there's some things that you actually gain because you're strength training in a shorter period. So let's dive into that. Like, how can that be true?
So remember I talked about the three elements of the exercise stimulus: the mechanical loading, the muscle damage, the metabolic stress. Each one of those has a corresponding adaptation that it provokes the body to produce. And in the case, for instance, of mechanical loading, the primary adaptation to more mechanical loading is an increase in strength. So think about this. If we stimulate maximum levels of mechanical loading, you're going at your voluntary maximum all of the time during your set. That's very intense, right? That's very potent. Your strength increase will be greater than had you used a lesser stimulus. So when you're in the weight room and it takes 30 minutes to do chest, takes 20, 30 minutes to do legs, you necessarily are forced by the tool that you're using, the weights, to use some percentage of your one rep max, typically, 70% or 80% of your one rep max. And as a result, you require multiple work sets to get the volume that you do need in order to produce the adaptation you're looking for. But in the process, you have sacrificed this mechanical loading that we're able to get. So the fact that we go at our maximum, it can only last so long. It's necessarily very short in duration because it's so intense. It's maximum mechanical loading. In the process, we also stimulate a greater strength increase than someone who uses a lesser weight for multiple sets takes 20, 30 minutes. If you talk about hypertrophy, these are all sort of elements of hypertrophy.
Define hypertrophy for us.
Hypertrophy is the process of the growth of a biological element. In this case, muscle hypertrophy.
Okay, so we're talking about
muscle growth.
Size.
Yeah, muscle development and the increase of the cross-sectional area and also adding sarcomeres in series. It's kind of all in one ball of wax.
And let me put a bookmark there because you just talked about two sort of mechanisms of hypertrophy, adding the growth and size and lengthening.
Right.
There. We won't get into that today, but I want to talk about that in the future.
Okay. Yeah, that's all good stuff too.
Hypertrophy to come.
And so, the hypertrophy that you can get, we found is very much based off the mechanical loading that you experience and the muscle fiber recruitment. And then the muscle damage plays some role in recruiting new satellite cells and macrophages in the recovery process and adding new mass. But it's the same principle. The potency of our stimulus, where you're going at your maximum all of the time, that means you can't do it for very long. How long can you sprint, right? Not very long. So if someone is doing pump and tone sets, they're doing work set after work set after work set, that's not what's effective. That's what they have to do, because if they go heavier, they can't last as long, and you need to build up some workout volume. We can build up that amount of workout volume in just the one set when you're going at your maximum all of the time. Same thing with the metabolic stress, the use of fuel. The depletion of glycogen in the muscle results in a replenishment in the glycogen of the muscle to fill it out, and takes with it water and sodium and gives you a full look. Mm-hmm. So in all three cases, it's the potency of the stimulus that results in the short duration.
Okay.
It's the stimulus that's better. And it just so happens you can't do it for them.
So let's talk about something you just mentioned there. So we're talking about two outcomes here. One of them, better hypertrophy or more efficient hypertrophy. And the same thing on strength. Those are huge. So let's go back to episode one real quick when we talk about longevity. Longevity, I think everybody agrees, sort of the human body, disease, all these things are really big and complex. And we like to think we know a lot of stuff. And some of my favorite people on these topics right now are the first to say, like, we don't really know a lot about anything.
Right.
But we do know there are some correlations. And so some of the correlations with longevity that we're pretty clear on are things like strength and muscle, right? So these are some of the outputs we're looking for. This is important. it's important that we're getting stronger or maintaining strength as we age. We know that. It's important that we have muscle on us. So these outcomes you're talking about aren't just something we should kind of breeze by. Like, oh, yeah, maybe I'll order some strength on this menu, or maybe I'll order a little bit of muscle on this menu. These are sort of the things. But somebody might be, if I'm listening to this, it's like, great, yep, I get it. You go, me pick something heavy up and put it down, I get stronger, I get bigger muscles, and it's heavier and it's shorter time. Are there any other benefits that you get from the potent exercise or from the potent stimulus that you wouldn't get outside of strength and hypertrophy that you wouldn't get maybe if you were doing things much longer and lighter?
Sure. So one of the surprising things people don't usually connect is strength training with cardiovascular ability. So in this case, it's often measured by something like VO2 max, your ability, your oxygen uptake, the degree to which you can deliver oxygenated blood. It travels through the body, ends up at the muscle. Muscle takes it in, combusts the fuel, and they can then buffer out the waste product. So when you, there's a simple sort of example I like to bring up where walking gives you a better cardiovascular result than just sitting there. And then running is a little bit better than walking. And then jogging is somewhere in the middle. And then sprinting is the best of all. And the duration of each of those reduces as the intensity rises. Now, why is it that sprinting is better than running, is better than jogging, is better than walking? It's because of what's happening in the muscle. So it's not moving fast through space that gives you a cardiovascular benefit. Otherwise, we could all be on scooters and our VO2 max would rise. It's not moving through space. It's the contraction of the muscles involved is what is upstream of the effect. So there's also some counterproductive things like the impact on the joints that occurs while we're sprinting, the time it still does take to do these things. So what if we were able to produce an effect inside the muscle and force it to contract with maximum intensity all of the time? It stands to reason that that would be better than the sprinting, because sprinting's intermittent, right? So this is constant. And as a result, even with strength training, even moving very slow on the type of devices we have, you're still going at your maximum all of the time. And as a result, the increase in VO2 max is much, much greater than traditional cardio type of exercise.
Wait a second. Let's just put this on record. And you said it, not me. Okay. I'm just repeating.
I'll take the emails or the comments.
Yeah, that's right. So you can get cardio benefits by strength training.
Yeah.
But that's called cardio. And this is called strength training. So you're saying the cardio benefits come with somehow miraculously working the muscle.
Yeah. All cardio benefits are a result of muscle doing work. There is no cardiovascular benefit that I can think of that's derived without muscle doing work. And you could talk about the zones and zone two, where you could talk about the Tabata stuff. There's any type of study that's been done, but the action is happening inside the muscle. There was a great study done. I want to say it was 76. There was a guy, I'm going to get some of the details wrong, but basically he took a group of people and he had them on exercise bikes and he tested their VO2 max. Then he took a group of people, that same group, and he trained them for 12 weeks, but he trained them only using one leg. So they pedaled with one leg.
Okay.
At the end of 12 weeks, they get back and they tested their VO2 max again with the two legs. And they experienced a 22% increase in their VO2 max. Makes sense. But if this is supposed to be a systemic increase,
The VO2 max is longer than heart.
Yeah, that's where the action's happening.
That's right.
When he tested their untrained leg, the VO2 max was the same as it was 12 weeks earlier. And when he tested them just doing their trained leg with the mask on, 22% increase, just like before. So wait a minute. If the VO2 max increase is a function of the heart and lungs as the thing that's improving, where was the systemic benefit when they're doing the untrained leg? And the reason is when you have a stronger muscle that's more efficient at taking in fuel, combusting it, and buffering it out through training, you're able to uptake oxygen much more efficiently. So your VO2 max rises. Right. Another more colloquial way to explain that is, like, let's say you have a staircase and it takes you 100 units of strength to climb the staircase. And let's say your maximum strength that you have to give is, 120 units. Yeah. Okay. You'll be pretty out of breath by the time you get to the top of the staircase. You come to the perfect workout, you work out on the fast fit machines, and it's been 6 months. We've doubled your physical capacity and we measure like our total work number. So now you have 240 units that you can put out before you call it quits. That same 100 unit staircase will be a far smaller proportion of your momentary capacity. And as a result, you'll be far less out of breath when you get to the top. And you'll experience it like, my cardio must be improving.
Yeah.
Like I must be in better shape because before I was really out of breath, but now I'm not. Sure, you have a better ability to use oxygen, but only because you're stronger. You have more work capacity. You have 240 units of capacity, whereas before you had half that. So with the same tasks of our daily lives, the analogy is like the staircase, everything we're trying to do in our daily lives now represent, as we get stronger, a smaller proportion of our momentary capacity. And as a result, we think our cardio has improved. We're out of breath less often. We don't get winded as much. And yes, there is some of that happening, but it's a combination of maximally stimulating the fuel use in the muscle cell over time, which ramps up that process like a sprinting sort of protocol, but also the strength benefit that's happening at the same time in that same process that gives you this greater capacity to produce work with your muscles. So every single task, athletic task, every sprint, everything like that occupies a far smaller proportion.
Yeah. So this is goes back to that idea of, and I think it's fair to say, so this is that third piece that people talk about a lot lately. We know that VO2 matters when it comes to measuring outcomes that are important for people that are living longer and healthier.
Yeah.
So now we have strength, you know, related to hypertrophy. We have strength related to and muscle related to VO2, and that these things are synergistic. I know for me, this is going to sound bragging, but if you saw me, you wouldn't take it that way. I ran cross country in high school, played all kinds of sports, etc. My VO2 now, when I test this on a treadmill, by the way, is much higher because I have more muscle on me and I don't train, quote unquote, for VO2. I don't train cardio, quote unquote, for VO2. It's just the case that over the last 10, 11 years that I've been at the Proof Workout and I've focused on putting on more muscle and gaining more strength, my VO2 has gotten better. So let's go to bone density. This seems to be another important one when it comes to making sure that that stimulus is potent.
Yeah. So, a lot of people, and you'll hear different statistics based on whoever's saying it, but you've heard the thing, after age 30 or after age 35 or after age 40, you lose such and such percentage of bone density. And the principle of it is true. You build up bone density and then you're 25 and you're 30, it kind of maxes out and then it slowly descends. Bone is not just brittle, dead tissue. It's not like your nails or your hair. It's living tissue. It's spongy. It's bendy. It has a lot of characteristics to which many people don't assign it. So first, we understand that. Then the second thing is that there's something called Wolf's Law. And Wolf's Law, there's this guy named Wolf.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you get to make a law like that. You got to discover something pretty cool. Basically.
And had a cool name.
Right. He discovered the piezoelectric effect inside bone. And what he discovered was that when bone compresses axially, so like a cylinder along its length, there is electric charge produced. It's called a piezoelectric effect, kinetic energy producing a voltage. And it's this voltage that is a signaling mechanism that tells the body we need more bone density here. We need to lay down new bone tissue. And so this effect was called Wolf's Law. And then there were later studies done in the late 90s and in the early aughts, early part of the turn of the century. Got some gray on my beard, I can say that. And it was the biodensity machines and Dr. John Jaquish, and his research showed a certain threshold above which bone would be stimulated, below which it would not. But the principle was the same. Mechanical loading of the bones stimulates new bone growth. And so that's why this type of workout with matched eccentrics, so the negative when the active muscle lengthens, by maximizing the mechanical loading during that phase, we can say that the FastFit machines are the best possible tool for the purpose of increasing bone density, because we have our concentric strength, how much we can lift, and then we have our isometric strength, the amount of force that we can produce in a non-moving contraction, and then above that even is eccentric strength, the amount of force that is produced by an active muscle as it lengthens.
Yeah.
So if it is true, and so far it seems like it is, that bone density is improved as an adaptation to the stimulus of mechanical loading, and if it's also true that eccentric contractions at a maximum voluntary effort are the greatest mechanical loading of which our bodies are capable, you put those two together, and it becomes pretty obvious that repeatedly performing maximal eccentric contractions at a slow and controlled velocity with a controlled preset range of motion that can never get dangerous is the most effective, most potent, and fastest way to maintain and enhance a person's bone density, which is why, as we say a lot, the machines are for grandmothers and linebackers. It's like, so if you want to get jacked and huge, it's the best for hypertrophy because it maximizes muscle damage and mechanical loading. It's actually the best for sprint training and improving VO2 max. But then it's also the best for bone density for anybody worried about that. And oh, by the way, the people 50 and up should probably be more worried about hypertrophy and bone density than the bodybuilders, because they'll be fine, you know, but later on. So it's just anything that strength training can do. This maximizes all of it because it's so potent of a stimulus.
So it seems like we're going back to health span. We've got strength. We've got hypertrophy. We've got better cardiovascular work, higher VO2. Bones, probably want to throw that in the toolbox.
You're going to want those.
Yeah.
You want those.
I want those. So I think in some future episodes, we're going to do some episodes called just more benefits, right? Because we could go a long time here. I'm going to stop us at bones, and we all agree. We want bones. We want a good
cardiovascular system. It's spine day, bro. It's spine day. That's true. Let's work on the skeleton today, bro.
Muscles, strength, you're going to need that. I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and I think we should dive into this a little bit here before we wrap up. So this will be a little longer than last time. But it was this idea, and I get it. I approach everything in life with huge bias and dogmatic thinking. And of course, in those moments, I think I'm not being biased and I don't have dogmatic thinking.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So what I'm about to
certainly not me. Certainly not you. We would never.
Yeah.
We would never.
So this might ruffle some feathers, but it seems to me that if the stimulus is important, you talked a little bit about some adaptive resistance. You talked about matching your abilities through different ranges of motion, eccentrics, et cetera. A conversation that comes up a lot lately is, you could use any tool. They all kind of produce the same results. And sort of naively, not considering this idea that there might be some technology now, and there might be even more technology in the future that can make this better, more effective, even safer, et cetera, even more efficient. Is that true? And if so, we'll dive into that more. But is there any research, as I point to this banner behind me, that's been done for evidence?
Yeah, it turns out, so the FastFit machines, isokinetic devices, it's kind of the most current generation of isokinetic devices. It's better and it's not particularly close. So on one hand, you could say, it's kind of the same as weights. Like if you're working out intensely with a MedX or Nautilus type machine, you just get to the same place, but faster. I've heard that a lot. You do get to the same location faster, but then you keep going even more because, like we talked about, if you have mechanical loading with a FastFit machine that's beyond the mechanical loading that's possible through the use of weights, well, then it stands to reason you would get greater increases in strength than where it would ever be possible through the use of weights. Also, the fuel depletion of a workout, when you're going maximum all the time on the FastFit machine, it's simply... a lot of people call that inroad, the degree and depth of fatigue. You can fatigue more deeply on a FastFit machine than would have been possible with weights. And you can get to these deep levels of fatigue more quickly than would have been possible with weights. Because with weights, you're forced to underload yourself. You have to use some percentage of your concentric max, which is a very, very low, low level. And you do it over and over again until you can't do it anymore. But here, you can go as much as you want all of the time. So the fatigue can be much more rapid and reach a much more deep point. So anything that you can get from weights, you can get from a FastFit machine, but to a greater degree, a greater magnitude, much more rapidly. And so this study, this was from 2021, Western Colorado, did a really cool study where they had FastFit machine and then a weightlifting group. The weightlifting group just did the ACSM standard boilerplate, started out, it was 12-week study. They started out twice per week, and the final 4 weeks, they did three times per week. They did 10 different common weight room movements, big compound movements, and then biceps, tricep. They did leg extension, hamstring curl, the usual classics. And at first, they used 70% of one rep max, one set of each to failure. And then with the FastFit group, they only had the FastFit Pro, which is leg press, chest press, row, calf flexion, torso extension, torso flexion. So just six movements, one set of each thing. And then after 12 weeks, they retested everybody. So there was the one rep max and the five rep max testing. And then there was anthropomorphic measures of waist circumference, and they did body composition and so forth. So the results couldn't have gone better for the FastFit group. It was so embarrassing.
And when you get into these, how did they test?
So
the groups on their strength gains.
Strength gains, they put everybody through a one rep max testing and then a five rep max test.
And did they train on the Pro And
oh, that's a good point. Yeah. So they tested using the movements that the weightlifting group was practicing for 12 weeks. So they practiced the test. They used the same exact equipment for the test. Yes. So when it was testing day 12 weeks later, hey, this stuff you've been practicing on, so you've had your strength increase, but also your neurological learning,
right, period, some
your motor learning specificity of learning. We're going to test you on that. And then the FastFit group, who hadn't lifted a weight in 12 weeks, it just going to test basically just their strength because they had no increase in skill. And even so, we could start there. The FastFit group basically doubled the strength improvements of the weightlifting group. Doubled.
On their own test,
on their own movements. Both groups got stronger because strength training works, but the increase seen in the FastFit group was just about double for almost every movement, even the movements like the overhead press. The FastFit group didn't do any overhead pressing movement. They only did the chest press, but the resistance that they were using is so potent and so effective that it made even this movement pattern stronger because it's a lot of the same muscles. So same thing with the hamstring curl. There was no leg flexion exercise in the FastFit group, but they doubled the improvement seen in the hamstring curl group. Same thing with triceps and biceps. There was no direct arm work done for the FastFit group, but they exceeded the improvements seen by the weightlifting group in biceps curl and triceps press down. Other things, both groups lost a little bit of fat. There was no mention of nutrition to either group. So we don't know why they lost fat.
Keep eating like you're eating.
Yep. With this, just an observation. Both groups lost fat, but the FastFit group lost three times as much fat. And again, we don't know why, because nutrition didn't change. And then both groups added lean mass, but the FastFit group added twice the amount of lean mass. Both groups saw a decrease in waist circumference, which makes sense. You're changing body composition. But the decrease seen by the FastFit group was four times the decrease seen by the weightlifting group. And then we were talking about VO2 max, another predictor of longevity. Both groups saw an increase in their VO2 max, but the FastFit group's increase in VO2 max, their cardio, was three times the improvement seen by the weightlifting group. And then my favorite stat from the study. So there's all that. So FastFit's better. It's not close. It doesn't just get you to the same place faster. It gets you beyond where you could have gotten. But over the course of the 12 weeks, the weightlifting group spent 21 hours exercising, if you add it all up, 21 hours. And then the FastFit group spent 6 hours over 12 weeks.
Uh-oh.
I know people who exercise here. Exactly. So I know people who have exercised 6 hours this week.
Yeah.
So over 12 weeks, they exercised for 6 hours and doubled, some cases tripled, or the waist circumference quadrupled, the results seen by a group who exercised 21 hours. So 72% less time over the 12 weeks. And of course, as you go, the compound interest of this, imagine these groups a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later. So, so yeah, it's better. It's not particularly close. And I often, in my experience, over a decade of using this technology, is like the results you would see in 1 year, consistently going to the weight room 3, 4, 5 times a week for an hour a pop. That's kind of within 3 to 4 months using a FastFit technology. The 5 years of weightlifting, you can get there in about 1.5 to 2 years using FastFit and then get to a higher level. We all have our genetic limit.
Hey.
You can't just grow forever. I'm trying, but you can't,
hard.
Grow forever.
Right.
You can't gain strength forever. So everyone has their limit. But that plateau you reach, it's a higher plateau because your stimulus was more potent than had you used weights, you know, when you use FastFit. But you get there more quickly and then can maintain it for longer. So in that discussion about health span and get as high as you can get when you're younger and then maintain it, this is the best tool for that purpose in regards of time and effectiveness,
yeah,
and efficiency.
All right. Well, producer Ben is telling us we're getting close here, so let's wrap this up.
I tend to. Yep. Sorry.
No, it's great. Okay, so big takeaways today. The potency matters and technology can impact the potency.
Yeah.
And when it comes to those markers of just living a better life, a happier life, a longer life, and the obstacles that get in the way, you can do it in less time and add the right strength, the right muscle, bones. You're going to want them.
You're going to want those.
And get the VO2 up.
Hell yeah.
Cool, man.
Nice.
All right. See you next time.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in to the Perfect Workout Podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at theperfectworkout.com for more resources or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make fitness simple, empowering, and a part of life well lived. See you next time.